the characteristics of God. And the reason that we discuss this is because it's important to us. It affects the way that we live our lives. It affects the way that we see our relationship with God. So tonight we're going to look at God and his description as a jealous God. We don't, generally speaking, think about jealousy as a very attractive trait. But I'm convinced that in many contexts, jealousy is, in fact, a very attractive trait. And we're going to talk a little bit about the positive and nature, or positive and negative nature of jealousy when we get further along. But the way that we generally speaking, the way that I generally speaking, think about the jealous nature of God is probably best seen in many of the Old Testament scriptures. The first one that comes to mind is Exodus, the 34th chapter, and verse 14. And the writer says, "Do not worship any other god, for the Lord, whose name is jealous, is a jealous God." So what do you see as the significance of the idea that his name is jealous? Yeah, Bill.
A question. I have never noticed that it said his name is jealous. I don't understand that.
Okay. Let's see if we can figure that out. What's the significance of the fact that his name is jealous? Yeah, Lee?
He wants no other in front of him, behind him, or beside him. He is it. He is jealous.
Okay.
Anything other than that is not right.
What significance do you see to the idea that his name is jealous? You're right. That's a description of him, but what do you see in the idea that his name is jealous? Yeah.
He is the one true living God.
Okay. One true living God, Kim.
When we name our children, we don't do this as much as they did in the Old Testament economy, in the Jewish economy. When they gave a name to a child, it had some kind of significance. It was to describe who they are. You think about Jacob and Esau. You think about Israel. You think about all of the, and really even Jesus, Emmanuel, and those names have some significance. And I think that when you have a moniker or a name, it represents the very being of who you are. And he's basically saying, I am so isolated, so different, so peculiar that is my name, that there's no other God beside me. I am the only one. And so, when you think about it, I don't think about calling God jealous when I refer to him as a name. I don't really give the Lord a name, I guess, but maybe I should. I don't know. But I think that in the Old Testament, we see a lot of characteristics and importance in the name that is given you. In fact, God changes people's names as he changes relationships with them. So I think there's a significance in the word that you use to represent who you are.
Okay. So, yeah, Carol?
But you look at it as we look at it here in earthly terms, somebody may be jealous of somebody else's job or something that they have or of another person. And so that doesn't fit the description at all of God's jealousy. And I think God is jealous for us. In other words, he created us, and so he wants what's best for us. And I can't really put my finger on, because like Bill, I don't think I've ever really thought of him. I mean, I knew he was a jealous God because you weren't supposed to, but his name being jealous is just...
Well, I think Kim kind of hit on some of it. Old Testament names had a lot of meaning, and you see that over and over again. Yeah, Dean?
Well, I was just going to say that the name defines. So you don't have to go into a lot of explanation when you say, Dean, we know you. This name, jealous, defines him. I mean, and we can use today's terms for jealousy. If you're dating a young woman and you're walking through the mall and you glance over at another young woman and that evokes a response and you want to spend time with somebody else instead of that individual, and that creates a response. God is, it's the exact same way. I don't want you looking anywhere else. You know, and so it's, the name is basically defining who he is. And when we think of jealousy as like, you know, you alluded to earlier, you can look at it as a negative or a positive. We kind of tend to look at it as, I'm going to say, a burden. Like, oh, she's jealous, or oh, he's jealous, and it creates problems and distrust. But for God, it is, I created you, I am God. There is nobody else to look at. Don't cast your eyes over there. And it's defined in that name. It's just how I see it. So.
Okay. Yeah, Eileen?
So I kind of cheated a little bit. I looked it up. And it's what Dean said, because he wants people to worship and serve him exclusively.
Okay. Without a doubt. Yeah, Bill?
I was curious if possibly Yahweh actually means jealous.
Is he jealous? Yes.
I mean, that's literally his name.
That's the shortest answer I've ever given to any question. But no.
No, I think you misheard the question.
I misheard the question. Okay, I gave a short answer and got the wrong question. Okay, can you say it again, Bill?
Is it possible that Yahweh is actually jealous? That's the definition for the word, for his name.
For Yahweh, no. I don't think, no, no. No.
Did anybody bother to look up the definition of jealous?
Eileen just read it.
Okay.
Eileen just read it. I said he wants people to serve him, and I can't find it again, exclusively.
Exclusively.
Okay. Yeah.
I have a commentary here that says, God, about a jealous God. God will not put up with rivalry or unfaithfulness. Usually his jealousy concerns Israel and assumes a covenant relationship analogous to marriage. And the Lord's exclusive right to possess Israel and to claim her love and allegiance. Actually, and I like this, jealousy is a part of the vocabulary of love.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's interesting.
I just thought that was a really succinct, and this author goes on and gives a lot of citations of where God is referred to as a jealous God.
Yeah. But yeah, and so did the author of our reading for tonight. We have some jealousy going on back here. Go ahead. Andrew, you get to go first.
So I looked up jealousy, and it gives you four different definitions there. And our definition, you know, that we talk about today is feeling or showing envy of someone or their achievements and advantages. But the fourth definition there says, it says in parentheses, of God, demanding faithfulness and exclusive worship.
Okay. Mandy.
The only one that I would add is the third definition.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, thank you, Google. Fiercely protective or vigilant.
Okay. Fiercely protective or vigilant. That's interesting.
I like that.
Kind of hang on to those definitions a little bit. Kim is always telling me that it's really important. It's been said that the most beautiful word in the English language is your own name. And Kim is always telling me, get people's names right. And I'm really bad about that. I sometimes give you a name in my head that just doesn't correspond to your real name, and it'll come out wrong. Has anybody been following the news and the recent flap over whether you pronounce Kamala Harris as Kamala or Kamala Harris? And some people said Kamala and got a real beating in the press because they said that's disrespectful to not call someone by their name. And that was what, when I read this statement in the reading that we had for this week, that was what struck me, is disrespecting somebody is sometimes expressed by the name by which we call them. And, you know, so then I started trying to think about nicknames. Your parents give you your name, but everybody else gives you your nickname. And sometimes I think your nickname is kind of more of a show of respect than your name, because your nickname is kind of something that you earned. That was just something that I was thinking about. And for a guy whose first name is Cheryl and would prefer to be called by my name, by my middle name, Dean, I suppose this takes on added importance because I have been a boy named Sue my whole life. Yeah, Kim. Or Kim.
I'll take
Mandy.
I will take it any minute. I think the thing about nicknames to me has always been, because I go by Mandy, I don't go by Amanda. Those that know me call me Mandy. When you are known by God, we understand this jealousy. We understand what we call God. And your given name at birth is rather arbitrary. I like the name Nolan, Abby, Lauren, Evan, Seth. I like those names. I didn't know that child. This is Noli or Omi. He has his name that once we get to know him, we know them as a different kind of being. And I think that's what this really comes down to. When we talk about the significance of the name being jealous, it's understanding and having that respect for that role of God.
Okay. Yeah, Carol?
The number three definition that Mandy read makes me think of, so long as jealousy has its place in righteousness, which God's jealousy is right, that means that that God is looking out for us. And so he's jealously guarding us to make sure that we go in the right places, and as it says, that he's going to make all things come out the best that it could possibly happen. So when, if you think about the jealousy of God guarding you, it's easier to take than another understanding of jealousy might be. I can see that one very easily.
Yeah. Well, hang on to that thought. We're going to get to positive and negative in just a minute. But hang on to that thought. And I think we've kind of touched on the second question that I have up here. How can of what we generally think of as a vice in men be a virtue with God? We generally think of jealousy as being kind of ugly. Or at least I do. I don't want people to think of me as a jealous person, because I associate so many negatives with it. But in a way, I think we need to understand how jealousy guards something. I'm jealous about my name, and I guard it. I don't give it out. You know, if I go to a website and they want me to fill out my name, I click off of that website. Because I don't want to give you my name without thinking about it. I don't want to give you my phone number. I don't want to give you my address, my email. I jealously guard my name. And for that reason, I think there's a sense in which I have limited jealousy so that it becomes only a vice. And I need to learn not to do that. So this description, yeah, Dean, I'm sorry, you had your hand up.
Oh, actually, I was just standing here, but I was thinking that we look at jealousy as distrust. That's the human way. So if my wife early on, every time I talk to a female, gets mad at me because she's jealous, she's telling me she doesn't trust me. Now, it might just be that she doesn't trust her, whoever that her is. But when we look at the virtue in God, it's kind of the same in the fact that, like in the verse up there, God says he's a jealous God and he gives them instructions, lest these things happen. And so as a parent and as a firearms instructor, I was very adamant with my kids. They could handle a gun anytime they wanted to, as long as it was with me. They had a grandpa that was a retired police officer, not allowed to. They had a grandfather that was an avid hunter, not allowed to. I was a jealous father when it came to those things for their safety, like you were saying. And I think that that's how we have to separate that distrust, but really it's a distrust. God doesn't trust the world to have our best interest in him. Only he does. So,
okay, good point. And a good way to say it, God doesn't trust the world to have our best interest at heart, but he always does. And so he becomes jealous of us. And it's kind of guarded. Yeah, here.
I think if you say he is jealous for us.
Okay.
It has a different, God's jealousy is for us. And man's jealousy is of or to. So I think maybe if we make that distinction, it might make it easier.
That's an interesting distinction, and I believe that it's a distinction that's made in one of the Gospels. It may be in what Paul said, I am jealous for you. But it's somehow it sticks in my head, and I didn't look it up. I didn't it didn't occur to me, but somehow it sticks in my head that Jesus told the parable about the fiance who is bringing his bride to his father's house, and it's described as a jealousy. You know the definition of the best man. The best man was chosen because he was the best swordsman that the groom knew, and he could help to protect his wife. So that was the best man's job, was to protect the couple. And I think that may be the idea behind jealousy. Okay? So, as you read this in Exodus, what was the sin that was causing Moses to describe God or to say, this is what God has told me about God? What sin was it that was provoking this name?
Idolatry. The golden calf.
Yeah, they went after other gods. And by going after other gods, they were taking themselves away from the protection that God was going to give them or wanted so desperately to give them. He says, I'm a jealous God. I can't share you with something else because that something else is going to hurt you. Okay? So let's think about the negative aspects of jealousy. And we've kind of touched on it a little bit. Can I get somebody to read Deuteronomy 6, verses 14 and 15? And then somebody else read Joshua 24, 19 and 20.
You shall not follow other gods, any of the gods of the people who surround you. For the Lord your God in the midst of you is a jealous God. Otherwise, the anger of the Lord your God will be kindled against you, and he will wipe you off the face of the earth.
So this is jealousy that's directed at people who had gone after other gods. That's a pretty negative view of jealousy. How about Joshua 24?
And Joshua said unto the people, you cannot serve Jehovah, for he is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgression nor your sin. If ye forsake Jehovah and serve foreign gods, then he will turn and do you evil and consume you, and after that he hath done you good.
Okay. So again, kind of a negative view of jealousy. What do you see here?
People were committing a spiritual adultery.
Okay. Spiritual adultery it's a good word, adultery. How do you define that?
We're worshiping other gods.
Sin.
And unfaithful.
And sin separates you from God.
Going after other gods when you should be married to God.
Exactly.
Okay. This idea of spiritual adultery carries with it the idea that you already have a relationship with God, and you should be true to it. God is jealous. He won't share you with somebody else. Can somebody read Zephaniah 1, verse 18?
Neither their silver nor their gold will be able to deliver them on the day of the Lord's wrath. And all the earth will be devoured in the fire of his jealousy, for he will make a complete end, indeed a terrifying one, of all the inhabitants of the earth.
Yeah. Okay. Again, there's that kind of negative aspect of jealousy. And it's jealousy that's provoked by what we do in rejecting God. Yeah, Carol.
Is it also just as simple as God cannot tolerate sin? And so the sin creates him to be jealous, but it's the sin that also keeps you away from God, and that he will destroy you because you are sinful.
Okay. So he doesn't want a relationship with you that's tainted by sin. That's not the relationship that he wants. Okay. So let's talk about a little bit about the positive side of jealousy. And let's see. The first passage that we'll read is Nahum, the first chapter at verse 2. He says, go ahead, Eileen.
I'm sorry. God is jealous and the Lord avenges. The Lord avenges and is furious. The Lord will take vengeance on his adversaries and he reserves wrath for his enemies.
Okay. So it's as if God is going to execute judgment against people who are standing against him. Okay. What does that mean to me? If I'm standing with God, how is that a positive for God to say, I will destroy those who are my enemies?
Means you're safe.
Okay.
You know, you're standing with God. Obviously, we know that man can hurt us, but our soul is safe. If we're not standing against God, we're standing with God, we're assured that he's not going to destroy us.
Okay. He's not going to destroy us, and he will destroy those people that are trying to hurt us. I'm jealous. I will not let you hurt my people. And that's a wonderful promise and a tremendous positive. Yeah, Carol.
Nobody can snatch you out of my hand. That's part of that jealousy and protection.
Yeah. I will not stand for people who hurt my people. And I'm thankful. I know that feeling. I will not stand for you to hurt my children or my wife. I will defend them to the death. The children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. I'm jealous of them. And I will not allow you to hurt them. Okay. Let's look at Ezekiel 36. And I think here in Ezekiel chapter 36, I included verse 5. So let's read 5, 6, and 7.
This is what the Sovereign Lord says. In my burning zeal, I have spoken against the rest of the nations and against all Edom. For with glee and with malice in their hearts, they made my land their own possession, so that they might plunder its pasture land. Therefore, prophesy concerning the land of Israel and say to the mountains and the hills, to the ravines and valleys, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. I speak in my jealous wrath because you have suffered the scorn of the nations. Therefore, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. I swear with uplifted hand that the nations around you will also suffer scorn.
Okay. We're familiar with the terrible curse that was pronounced against Edom because they would not allow the children of Israel to pass through their land. And they it's as if they took great pleasure in Israel's misfortune. Just like some of the people in Judah took great pleasure when Israel, the northern 10 tribes, were destroyed. And God will not allow that. Yeah, Carol.
Yeah, I also think I heard that he said, I made the land of milk and honey for my people, and you are trying to take it. This is for my people.
Yeah. This is the problem that Jonah had. Mm-hmm. Jonah misunderstood all of this, and he got angry when Nineveh repented. He wanted Nineveh to be destroyed. And so God had to teach him the lesson. If you read the end of the book of Jonah, he goes out on the hillside, the gourd grows, he's thankful for the shade, he can escape the summer heat, the gourd is withered, and Jonah gets mad that the gourd withered. And all of that to teach Jonah, you should be happy when my people prosper. And at that point, when Nineveh repented, they were God's people. So it's important to remember that jealousy, because someone else is blessed by God, is just an unholy thing. And it's about as ugly as it gets. Because God wants to protect his people. He wants to bless them. Now, who are you to get mad because God wants to bless his people? Zephaniah 3, verse 8. Somebody want to read that?
Therefore, wait for me, declares the Lord, for the day when I rise up to the prey. Indeed, my decision is to gather nations, to assemble kingdoms, to pour out on them my indignation, all my burning anger, for all the earth will be devoured by the fire of my zeal.
Yeah. It's good to have God on our side. It's a great protection. And we ought to be thankful for that. We ought to be, in a sense, thankful that God is jealous of us. He wants to protect us. And we need to accept that protection. So what's it mean for us? Let's look at the New Testament. I'm sorry, Andrew, do you have your hand up?
Yeah, I was just thinking there after we've gone through the whole negative to positive there. You can see in the positive, God is telling us, you stick with me, I'll protect you. And then the negative, he's like, well, you do have the choice to go find other people, find other gods. But I'll tell you what's going to happen in the end. So I like seeing both sides there where, you know, in the negative, he tells you, you don't follow me, I'll show you my jealousy. If you follow me, I'll show you my jealousy, but you'll be on the good side of it. You'll be on the side where I'm protecting you. But if you don't want to follow me, I'll show you my jealousy by showing you my wrath.
Yeah. Interesting that his wrath is not against us. His wrath is against his enemies, the people that would hurt his people. And, you know, I as I read through all of this and I think about all of this, what a blessing it was that God extended grace to Paul, or to Saul at the time, because he was going about finding Christians, God's people, and he was throwing them in prison. And he stood by when Stephen was stoned. And I think more than other people, he probably appreciated the grace that God showed him when he was deserving of wrath. Yeah, Carol.
I think that when you think of God's wrath and God's jealousy, it's like the grace. You have to remember how great God's love is. It is so much greater than our capacity to think about what love is. And if you can't separate them, which I guess that's why he says his name is jealousy, because it's as much a part of him, but the love is the overriding characteristic.
Yeah, it's like the comment that Kim read, jealousy is a part of love, the good kind of jealousy. Okay, so let's look at 1 Corinthians 10. This is the Apostle Paul, and he is talking about, in 1 Corinthians 10, he's talking about divided loyalty. And God will never accept divided loyalty, because he doesn't divide his loyalty for us. So he wants us to be like him. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 21 and 22.
You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the Lord's table and of the table of demons. Or do we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than he?
Yeah.
Can't be on both sides of the fence.
What is it that divides our loyalty today? We're probably not going to go out and make a golden calf.
Work, fun, sports.
Yeah. So a lot of things, money. A lot of things can claim our loyalty, and it's divided loyalty. And that's why Jesus said, you cannot serve God and mammon. It won't work. Number one, you won't be happy with either side, because you're not wholly given to that side. So you're not going to be happy. You're thinking, I can serve God and still serve money. No, you can't. It won't work. Yeah, Andrew.
I think anything that takes in our lives that we think takes priority over God is what takes us away. So that's anything from, you know, Sunday football to somebody else in our life that we think is more important. Now, I understand, you know, being sick, traveling, and having to go see family and all that. I get that. But if you totally, like, know that, oh, I should go to church Sunday, but I kind of want to go do this instead, that's where God is not okay with. But he understands falling ill. He understands taking care of family. He understands going to see family. He understands all that. But it's once you start prioritizing that more than him in your life, that's where you start to fall.
Yeah, and there is a sense in which the Apostle Paul says, if you get married, you're almost buying divided loyalty. So he said in 1 Corinthians 7, he said, I wish you could be like me, but not everybody has that ability. So just understand that an unmarried woman cares for the things of God. A married woman cares for the things of her husband. And so just take that to heart. You know, we have to have a job and provide for our family. But just understand that it can be a dangerous thing. And I'm not advocating that anybody quit their job and say, I want to give myself completely to God. I think the monastic life has something to recommend it, but it's not something that I advocate. I don't think God advocates it. But we do have to be aware of it. So let's look at James 4, and then we're going to have to wrap this up for the evening. Somebody want to read James 4, 5, and 6?
Or do you think Scripture says without reason that he jealously longs for the Spirit he has caused to dwell in us? But he gives us more grace. That is why Scripture says, God opposes the proud but shows favor to the humble.
Okay. That's kind of the positive side of the relationship that we have with God today. God opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. He wants us to have a relationship with him. But so much that he's willing to extend himself to start that relationship. And he did that with Jesus dying on the cross, giving us the Spirit. And he longs for us to understand the impact of that. So he gives grace to the humble. He gives us the Spirit. He longs for the Spirit to have its impact on us. Yeah, Carol, you got the last word.
You do again. I just want to go back because jealousy seems like, and wrath seems like such a negative thing. And to go back when Cain made a wrong sacrifice, this is something that resides with me. And that God just says, why is your countenance fallen? If you just do what's right, it'll rise again. And his forgiveness is so simple and so pure that you always have to remember that when you're looking at what's going on in life is, okay, all I have to do is ask other people for prayers and for help, and get on the right direction, but just work at getting things right. We're going to make mistakes.
Yeah. Okay. If you're here tonight and you don't have a relationship with God, we want you to. We want to help you to do that. God is jealous over you. He wants to protect you. He wants to take care of you. He just wants you to be his. And like Carol said, if you've had difficulty in that relationship with God, then turn away from that. Confess your faults one to another. James says, pray one for another. And the reason for that is the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. So we want you to think about that.